The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
I had a relationship with Jesus that was too much on my terms.
Coming up, teaching pastor Kyle Eidelman challenges you to consider what it really means to call yourself a Christian.
Too oftentimes our churches have become stadiums full of fans. People want to follow Jesus close enough to get the benefits, but not so close that it requires anything from them.
Becoming a completely committed follower of Jesus and not just a fan. Next.
Thank all of you and welcome to Life Today. I'm James Robinson, and I feel like I'm half here because Betty's not here. She had an eye that had a blood vessel break in it a couple of days ago, and it looks like it's going to take about a week for that to get better. It's nearly swollen shut. She wasn't comfortable being with us. I hope you'll understand. I've got a wonderful guest, Kyle Eidelman, who is one of the teaching pastors at Southeast Christian Church in Louisville. Dave Stone is pastor, and Dave, I'm sure you're watching because I know you watch me and you watch Betty because you've told us you have an appreciation for what we do, and I have so much admiration and appreciation for you and for your church and for your leadership and also for your friendship. But I know you're watching because I know you really like my guest today. I know that Kyle, and you even sent me an email, said he's some kind of preacher, James, and I'm looking forward to the two of you being together. So Dave, highest regards and appreciation for you, for the leadership there in one of the great churches in our nation. And I just thank God for you. Thank God for the ministry there at Southeast. And thank you for sharing one of your staff. And I want you to welcome Kyle Eidelman, if you will, to Life Today. Kyle,
thank you.
Good to have you here.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Well, I want to talk to you. You know, I actually saw clips of you preaching, and you're really good. I mean, I can tell you're zealous, and I'm kind of a zealous guy myself.
Yeah.
And I can remember when I was young, like you, I had a lot of zeal, but I've still got it, and I'm kind of an old guy.
I hope I'm going strong.
Still got it.
Yeah.
You'll be going strong. Not a fan. Uh-huh. I mean, this is, it's kind of a title that gets your attention, and Max Lucado talks about what an incredible book it is. Your pastor has said this is awesome. What are you talking about, not a fan? Tell me about your journey and tell me about what led to this book.
Well, a fan is simply defined as an enthusiastic admirer. And the book really began as a personal conviction in my own life that I had a relationship with Jesus that was too much on my terms. In other words, I defined it, I identified it more about what I wanted it to be and how I wanted it to look than necessarily what the Gospels taught. And as a result, oftentimes my sermons would reflect that. And so God broke me, convicted me on a Thursday. I was getting ready to go preach for Easter weekend. And at our church, we'll have 30 or 40,000 people come in for Easter weekend. And so I was feeling this pressure, right? I wanted it to be a good sermon. And, you know, we have a lot of what we call creasters on that weekend. And creasters are the people that only come on Christmas and Easter. And I think every church has them.
The creasters.
The creasters. And the creasters are...
Are they anything like creatures?
A little bit. They're a hard group to get. You know, they come a couple times a year. I even had one time, I finished preaching an Easter sermon, and the person caught me afterwards and said, "It's a great message. I'll see you next year." And that's kind of the mentality of the creasters. Yeah. And so I was sitting trying to think of, okay, what's a message that would get their attention? What's a way to creatively present this in such a way that they'd want to come back? And it just wasn't coming. And so I went into our empty sanctuary, and it's a big sanctuary. It seats around 9,000 people. And I sat there and just began to pray. I said, "God, what is it you'd want me to say?" And I pulled out a Bible out of the chair in front of me, and I just asked a very simple question that would end up really changing me as a person and as a preacher. And here's the question I asked. I said, "What did Jesus preach whenever he had his large crowds?" I just began to do a survey of the Gospels, making note of the different messages Jesus preached whenever he had the biggest audiences. And what I discovered was that when he had the big crowds, he would often preach a message that wasn't necessarily comfortable. It's not necessarily what they wanted to hear. And sometimes the people would go home. And so I sat there and I cried and I told God, "I'm sorry. because too oftentimes I had preached a message that I knew people would want to hear, that I thought would make me a little more popular, that I felt would be comfortable for all the creasters. And I made a decision that the apology had to go further. And so I stood up on that Easter weekend, and I said to all the people there, listen, I owe you an apology, because too oftentimes I've preached a gospel that has left out some certain areas. I've allowed there to be small print, and there's no small print in the truth of Christ. I have tried to make it more pleasing and more presentable, but in doing so, I've cheapened it. And so I began just really with a very heartfelt, tearful confession, hoping it would go no further than that. And what I discovered was that this is a message that God needed to convict me of. He needed to change a lot of hearts in our church, but it needed to go further, because too oftentimes our churches have become stadiums full of fans, where people want to follow Jesus close enough to get the benefits, but not so close that it requires anything from them. And they want the relationship on their terms. And so really, it's just a call back to the Gospels to objectively say, all right, what's it really mean to follow Christ? How does he define that? But it began in a very personal way for me. And so I just began to really challenge our church and myself with those questions. Are you sacrificing for Jesus? Is it costing you anything? And began to explore, are we really following Christ by carrying a cross, or have we decided that we're more comfortable with a gospel of ease, convenience, and comfort? The image I like to use is that of a Snuggie. You know what a Snuggie is?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a Snuggie?
Somebody gave me one. I have to admit it.
I would love the thought of you on a couch wearing a Snuggie, watching TV.
Just dream on, okay?
You know, that is a product that's sold millions and millions of blankets with sleeves, is really all they are in our culture. And we can be the people of the Snuggie. We like the Lazy Boy. We like, you know, the country club, the day spa. We like Snuggies. And so I think what has happened oftentimes is we've adopted this Snuggie theology, where we make it as comfortable as possible. But Jesus said it's going to mean carrying a cross. It's going to mean sacrificing. And so just asking,
What does that look like to carry the cross to somebody who's saying, well, what does that look like? Am I going to go around the wood? You know, Arthur Blessed carried it around the world, you know, drug it on wheels.
Right.
And he was a tremendous witness. But what does it look like to carry the cross? When you said, I want you to be a fan, I want you to carry the cross. Give me some examples.
Well, and that's the journey that I went on, is trying to explore that, because I don't want it to be something that you crochet in a pillow and you set out on the bed, carry a cross and follow me. It sounds very poetic. But what's that mean today? Because if Christians start living like Christians, if we start doing this, that's where revival, that's where awakening takes place. It's when we begin to not just speak our faith, but we begin to live it. So I went on this journey of trying to discover, okay, what's that truly look like in our world right now? What I found was I am so inspired by people across the country and across the world who are living this out. One of the things I do in the book is I tell about 14 different stories of people who have made the decision, I don't want to be a fan, I want to be a follower. And as you begin to see these practical examples, you think, that's it, that's what it is. We started a Facebook page that now has around 33,000 people from 18 different countries, and they've said, I don't want to be a fan, I want to be a follower. And they just begin to tell their stories of carrying a cross, denying themselves. Sometimes it's dramatic. For some family, it meant saying that they were going to quit their jobs and they were going to move to Haiti. This is right after the earthquake. And that they were going to do clean water projects in Haiti. And that's what it meant to follow Jesus. For another lady, it's a single mom, for her, it meant being intentional of helping care for her elderly neighbor who couldn't really care for herself. And so every day she goes and checks on her and she makes sure she has food and meals and is cleaned up after. And so you begin to see these practical examples of people who are following Jesus, and you know it when you see it. So that's someone who's denying themselves and carrying a cross.
When I see someone take that which is special and precious to them, which they treasure, because where your treasure is, that's where your heart is, and it means more than money. We treasure our time. Mm-hmm. When we're willing to give our time to someone else's need or an area of concern. That's what I consider being a follower. When we will take our gifts, whatever we have, the ability, whether it's to help people chart a course, help people deal with their challenges, help people think their way out. We take what we use for our own benefit. Nothing wrong with having personal interests. How are you going to love your neighbor as yourself if you don't love yourself properly and have legitimate self-interest? But when you'll take your same abilities and focus on helping someone meet their need, I see that as following Christ. Is that what you see?
Absolutely. And what I've discovered is that most people respond to that message enthusiastically. They want to embrace that. They're looking for something more, something deeper and more significant. That's not always true. We had one gentleman in our church, when we started to really be more intentional with this message, he sent in an email. And he said he didn't want to be a member of the church anymore. And he just said on there, "I don't like Kyle's preaching." That's all he said. I wanted to know more. And so I called this guy. I didn't know him, but I called him and I said, "Hey, I'm Kyle. I see you don't want to be a part of the church because you don't like my preaching. Help me understand a little bit more." And I caught him a little off guard, and he began to talk and ramble a little bit. But in the middle of it, here's what he said. He said, "When you're preaching now, I feel like you're trying to interfere with my life." And as soon as he said it, I thought, that's it. That's it. We are fine as long as we can compartmentalize our faith and say, when I walk into church on Sunday and I sit down, I can cheer in the stands, end of story. Mm-hmm. But when it begins to interfere with our finances, our treasure, our time, when it begins to interfere with our plans, then it becomes something much different.
Some other experience you said you wanted before we even came out, you said there's something that happened with somebody that pretty well illustrates what you'd like people to know about not being a fan, but being a follower.
I had no.
And you have men, like you said, you tell 14 specific stories.
Mm-hmm. I had no real intention, no plan of ever writing a book on the subject. And then I met a young man in our church, late 20s, single father, who had a pretty rough life before he came to Christ. And, you know, if he were to tell you his story, he would just say that it consisted of drinking and partying and waking up angry, not knowing why, just really without any direction. But when he became a Christian, everything changed for him, and he got it, and he went all in, really became committed in his faith, just great example for a lot of us. And one day he said, "Hey, would you meet and have coffee with me and my mom?" And it's kind of an unusual request, but I agreed, and I thought I knew for sure what we were going to talk about. I thought his mom, she just wants to say thank you to the church and thank you to me for the good things God has done in her son's life. That's what this is going to be about. She's just going to just drop some encouragement my way. And so I was looking forward to the coffee. We sit down for the coffee, and it went a much different direction. And she was upset. And here's what she said. She said, "My son has taken all of this too far." And she went on to explain how he needed to be working on Sundays, but was not taking the hours so that he could go to church. And he shouldn't be giving his hard-earned money to people who were in need because he had his own needs. And he was trying to give away copies of sermons and trying to always have prayer around the dinner table and making the family uncomfortable. And this is a lady who went to church, went to a different church, and considered herself to be quite religious. But here's what she said to me. She said, "Would you please tell my son that the Bible teaches moderation in all things?" She said, "Would you please tell him that the Bible teaches it doesn't have to be all or nothing?" And, you know, I tried to keep my cool, right? But I could see my nostrils flaring. And, you know, I start quoting Revelation about what Jesus says, you know, you're neither hot nor cold. And the whole call to follow him is an all or nothing call. And that's where life is found. And that's where beauty is found. It's only by going all in. And I realized then that this is a message that a lot of moms, a lot of children, a lot of churches needed to hear. So God began it in my life. He continues to teach me because there's many days where I'm more fan than follower. But I know that he seeks to have not necessarily churches that are full of fans, but he wants completely committed followers.
You appreciate what Kyle is sharing. Appreciate the importance of not being a fan, but a follower. It's following Christ. It's in following him and coming to him we find life. And it's in following him that we find the way through life. He's the way to life, but following him is the way through life, and it is the way to point others to the life that can only be found in him. And I really think a lot of people think it's just kind of going down to the church house. But the truth is, when you come to understand Christ, this is his house. We are the temple of God. He wants to live in us, and he wants us to become the fruitful field that it literally reveals the beauty of his presence and what the Father's like. The Bible's clear about it being kingdom life, and there's only one king. We're joint heirs, but not joint kings. He's king. He's ruler. We follow him, and when we follow him, we have life. And we can cheer him and praise him. He's worthy of our praise. But it's so much more than being in a cheering section. It's actually getting in the game. And that's what I'm hearing you say to people. Don't just sit in the pew. Stand up and go out and pierce the darkness.
Right.
Thank you. Would you say thanks to Kyle again? I think this is great. This is in the bookstores. If you want to know, there's a website for Southeast Christian Church. And if you want to know about, say, I think I want to go listen to this guy. And you want to listen to Dave, the pastor there, Dave Stone. It's just a wonderful, wonderful church. This is great. And you kind of remind me of when I was young, you know, more than 30 years ago. I still got zeal. I want you to know I'm a follower. And I'm still a serious follower. And I have no retirement in me anywhere. Got no quit in me, okay? I ain't sitting down. I'm going to stand up and try to get everybody else to stand up. I used to tease Benny Hinn when he was blowing on people and they're falling down. I said, you knock them down, I'm going to try to get them all to stand up. And I've been spending my life trying to get people to stand up for Jesus, to follow him with their whole heart, and to live for him and to love him with everything they are. And that's what we challenge you to do. I really thank God that you make it possible for us to have guests that have a testimony and a witness. You make it possible for us to present Beth Moore, Wednesdays with Beth. What a wonderful, inspirational teacher. She's raising up followers. Let me tell you something that I know. When we follow Jesus, we're going to release rivers of living water. Jesus said, out of your innermost being will flow rivers of living water. That means love and life. The love of God, the life of God's released. And there's no greater way to reveal the love of God and the river of God's life than to give people water. Jesus said, I'm the water of life. We can't live without it. Did you know that the greatest crisis in the world that's leading to more illness and more death than anything is contaminated water, disease-ridden water? And we don't have to research the cure. All we've got to do is provide clean water. Jesus said, if you'll give a cup of water in my name, you won't lose your reward. And what is that reward? It's doing the will of God, releasing the life of God. Would you join us saving lives by giving a cup of fresh, clean water? What about a well? Listen to this testimony. Listen to this very real story. And you and I have the answer.
My name is Dufin. Te ora sanga mbuvumbe fe zau chima nambula zau rai mandrene. Mijale. Azuti ereni titirin razu. Lahi sakaf le kere ngavau kere chimanan sakafu yere kere chimanan kane miruru avau ajaja rue anu valuvula ruevula lahani terak ana ajaja rue Fanimate. Tundrue maro malutu ranu. Tiranu tu malutu. Marare titruai. Ranu tu malutu. Tiranu tuk. Nalahelu rahu. Amwana kurue reu. Ie maharera kahi. Nikuhak az ti burkulu zirau tia chimisi tia ti chabua ku mamunje la putali fe chimisi Si manambula hikarakarako. Mi chane.
Daphne, I wish you could hear me. I know you wouldn't be able to understand me, and we had to have a translator so we could understand you and graphically put it on the screen so our viewers would understand you. But let me just tell you something. We care, and we can't help you. I didn't just see that little child sitting there on that rock and think, just some little kid. No. All the little children are precious in his sight. He didn't overlook them. But he's looking for hands and hearts and a mind that cares enough to say, I'll help. So I'm asking you to help us drill a water well in that area. We're going to drill more in that country, Madagascar, than probably any small land mass. Because the need's so desperate. But we'll be drilling water wells in 15 or 20 countries. You determine how many we can drill. But we drill hundreds every year, depending upon how many of you will help with gifts of $48. $48 gives 10 people water for the rest of their life. That's what it breaks out to. You take a $4,800 well, that's what they cost, $4,800, give at least 1,000 people water. Sometimes it's more than that. But that would break out to about $4.80 for the rest of their life in these incredible, desperately needy areas. If you could give a well, $4,800, many of you tell us, James, every year we do it. Betty and I give a well every time we have the project. We started years ago and said, God, we want to do it. And I'm telling you, God says when you are generous and you bless others, you yourself will be blessed and you'll be refreshed. God blesses us when we bless others. It's a blessing to bless others. I don't give to get, I give to give. And God blesses those who bless so we can keep blessing. Could you give a well, $4,800? Could you give $2,400 toward it and say, I pray someone joins me? Or $1,200 and pray three will? Whatever you can do, do it. But remember, $48 or $144, you got 10 people water the rest of their life. Or 30 people water the rest of their life. So I don't know what you can do, but there's a level at which you can help. So I'm asking you right now, would you do it? Would you be an answer to that mother's concern for her children? She's already lost children, disease and contaminated water. We can correct that. We don't have to do any research on it. She just needs a water well. We don't have to do a study. We know what she needs. Please dial the number. Take your bank card, use it like a check. That's how you should always use them. If you write a check, make it to Life. Go online, lifetoday.org, and make your gift. Father, I'm praying that every person watching will give something. Will you? I really believe you're praying that God will meet the need, but can you help meet the need? Would you dial the number? Make that gift of a well or toward the well. There's no level too small. We have some gifts that we want to send you. For any gift, I want to send you the book, Believe This, Not That. Every question, everything that's ever confronted you and you said, I don't know what to do. I can't handle it. Here's the answer in the Word of God. All the different questions and challenges, all the different points of conflict, you're going to be blessed. We always want to bless you. We're going to send you the beautiful water mugs, the Water for Life mug, the coffee cups and mugs that you can use that will remind you of the importance of water. And then the beautiful lamb and the lion bronze. It's one of the most beautiful art pieces we've ever presented. It's the peace of God that brings the impossible together. And we're doing the impossible for many when we give them water. Thank you for making that call. By the way, if you should ever get a busy, people are either calling to get help or calling to give help. You be persistent and you get through. Thank you for doing it.
Every day, millions of children are forced to make a dreadful choice. Drink filthy, polluted water filled with deadly disease or die from thirst. No child should ever be faced with this decision. The good news is that there is a solution. Mission Water for Life is one of the most exciting and viable demonstrations of God's love in the world today. Suffering can end because clean water changes everything. With your gift today, we will begin drilling 350 new water wells for remote villages in 12 different nations. Your gift of $24 will help provide clean water for 5 people. A gift of $48 will help provide for 10 people. $72 will impact 15 people. And $144 will help provide fresh, clean, disease-free water for 30 people for a lifetime. With your gift, be sure to request Believe This, Not That, a brand new topical Bible promise book that will encourage you in every area of life. With your gift of $100 or more, you may request our newly released Water for Life mug set, a daily reminder of the clean water you make possible to those who thirst. Also, please prayerfully consider a gift of $1,200 to help provide water for 250 people, or a gift of $4,800 to help sponsor a complete well, and be sure to request the 2012 commemorative bronze sculpture, The Lamb and the Lion. Please call, write, or make your secure gift online today.
I do want to emphasize the importance of, if you can drill a well, do it. If you can give $1,200 toward it or more, ask for the Lion and the Lamb bronze. It's absolutely beautiful. It's a treasured art piece. And I want to mention again Kyle Eidelman's book. Not a fan. I'm telling you, you follow Jesus, you're going to be blessed. And Kyle, I'm real excited. Betty and I are. You know, your pastor notified me how happy he was. You're like a son in the ministry. This is our son, Randy. And he wrote a book, God Wants You to Be Happy, Discovering Deeper Joy Than You Ever Imagined. This is our son. I've told him many times, I wish I could write like you, Randy. What a blessing. But would you join me again in saying thanks to Kyle? Thank you, Kyle. Blessings on Southeast Christian Church. Dave Stone, bless you, your family, the whole church family. You're a wonderful friend. Thank you so much for watching Life Today and sharing life every day.
Faith, family, and freedom are under attack. James Robison and Jay Richards encourage a divided America to stand together before it's too late. Indivisible, coming soon to online and retail bookstores.
By stripping Jesus of his personality, what happened is we stripped the church and his followers of personality as well.
John Eldridge, next week.
Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.